Hi, everyone. Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there is enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry. I am so honored today because I have Braden with me. Braden is a California licensed attorney and tax professional. His tagline is your gay best friend, here to help you get your legal, tax, and financial shit legit. Braden works primarily with service-based creative business owners through his signature program, Profit RX. Thank you so much for being here today, Braden.
Hi, thanks for having me. Very excited.
I'm excited to have you. So I would love for you to just really take us through your journey, how you got here today, and then we'll dive a little deeper.
Okay, sure. Well, I'll give you the short version and then you can, you know, dive in with specific questions if you have them. I don't want to bore everyone to death. I am originally from Indiana, so Midwesterner at heart. I went to Indiana University. I studied, like, my background's kind of all over the place, but I majored in Russian language and political science and studied business and German. But I had lots of varied interests. I ended up going to law school. That's what brought me out to California, where I got my law degree, passed the bar exam. And of all things, I never really loved math, but of all things, I discovered I really liked tax law. So I got a master's degree in tax law. So that technically makes me a tax attorney. I get mistaken for a CPA a lot. I'm not one, but I do tax consulting and small business law in addition to, you know, lots of other things.
Yes, no, absolutely. I appreciate you sharing that. And because a lot of people might have misconceptions of what a CPA is versus a tax attorney, what is the difference? Could you break that down for us?
Well, in my business, the difference is there's not really much of a difference. Like, I do a lot of work that a CPA would do. But from a practical perspective, like, a CPA stands for certified public accountant, right? So a lot of CPAs, they do auditing and accounting at the big four accounting firms. They maybe work in-house at a company. That's just one thing that a CPA can do. CPAs also, do taxes. Some CPAs don't do taxes, right? It's kind of like a lawyer. There's lots of different types of lawyers, different types of CPAs. Tax attorneys work in a few similar and a few different areas. So some tax attorneys, for example, one of my best friends from my tax program got a job at Deloitte and she worked on a Facebook account. So she helps Facebook, you know, save millions of dollars in taxes. Other tax attorneys do what we call tax controversy work, which is helping folks when I say when people start to get hate mail from the IRS, you go talk to a tax attorney to help you settle the back taxes and all that kind of stuff. So there's a few nuances, but I overlap a lot with more of the tax consulting piece.
Mm-hmm. And with working with small business owners as well, because there's a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs that listen to this, but what advice would you say for somebody who might need a tax attorney, especially at the small businesses?
Yeah, like advice, like tax advice or advice to like find somebody or what?
Both.
Well... The biggest things, if you're a new business owner, like you're a business newbie, you need to have a business bank account. This is like rule number one, because it's going to make your accounting so much easier. You need to be tracking all of your income and expenses. But if you have a business bank account, it like kind of does it for you. So that's, you know, get started, know your business deductions. And then also just be aware of when you need to have a professional working with you and when you can do some stuff on your own. So bookkeeping is pretty easy. If you want to pay us to do it, we're happy to do that for you, but it's pretty straightforward. Tax returns. A lot of people don't want to do their own tax returns, but you know, if you're going to go hire someone, make sure that you know what you're paying for. And just, you know, you got to have a basic knowledge is power. So you got to know at least the bare minimum in order to be a business owner.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah. And so I'm curious, what was your drive to start your own business? Because I know you've went to school, you did everything that you needed to, but what was the drive to start your own?
Yeah, I just didn't want to work for anybody, right? Like, I'm not a good employee. I don't like people telling me what to do. I like my own control and my freedom. So I'm sure a lot of other entrepreneurs can relate to that. That's kind of where I was. I always knew that I wanted to like have a business at some point in time. but I never knew what that would look like. And then halfway through law school, it kind of dawned on me. Well, I'm in a program where it's quite normal for people to have solo businesses, right? Like small law firms are just a very normal, like, fabric, part of the fabric of our society. So I was like, well, shit, I'll just do, you know, I'll do that. And that was, I knew before I got into my last year of school that I was going to be doing that. So I kind of gave up on applying for internships. I was like, I'm not doing any of that. I'll just do my thing. And I know I'm going to hang my shingle when I graduate.
I love that. You know, it's so interesting because coming from the psychology world, we had like classes that, okay, start your own private practice, but everyone kind of works together in the beginning. You don't really have that drive, or I didn't have that drive to say, okay, right away, I'm going to hang my shingle and we're going to be good to go. Like, I didn't have that, but I'm so curious because with where you went to school and everyone around you was like, okay, well, we're going to have our own firm. Like, that's just kind of how it went. And so when you did start your own practice, how did that evolve to it today?
Yeah, well, I will say my law school graduating class was probably, I don't know, like 200, 250 people. And there were about 10 of us who went solo, like right out of the gate. So it's definitely not like the majority thing, but it's also not super unheard of. We have, our school has an incubator program for people who want to start their own practice. And you kind of go through like an 8 weeks. It's almost like summer school, but after graduation, we have like a guest speaker every week who tells you, you know, like how to set up a client relationship management program and how to register your business. And it's funny because it's a lot of the stuff that I now teach is like what we learned in that. So that helped a lot. I also always tell people, because I think transparency is one of my company core values. I'm very clear with people that I probably would not have started my own business if I was not already living with my now husband, because I didn't have to worry about like groceries being bought or like rent being paid for. Like, I kind of had a security blanket there. So that helped a lot. So I had some time to get started. I also was like starting the business when I was getting my master's degree. So I didn't have any clients. But like while I was in class, while I was supposed to be listening to the lecture, I was like building my WordPress website. Like, you know how that goes. And then I met some business friends. And to be honest, like my first year, I had no idea what I was doing. I still remember a conversation very vividly. One of my business friends telling me that I needed to start an Instagram account. And I was like, why? Why do I need to like Instagram to market a law firm? And now that's just kind of, it's kind of like a no-brainer, but this was in 2017 and there weren't a lot of lawyers successfully marketing on social media. So if anyone goes to my Instagram and you scroll back to like the first post, you'll see that they're, you know, I almost find them embarrassing, like clip art basically compared to what I do now. So lots of time just like figuring it out, meeting people. And then it started to, you know, started to grow really in like a year or two.
I appreciate the transparency. And I didn't know that from your core values, just like looking at your website and everything along those lines. But I think transparency is so important because there's a lot of people out there that think, okay, well, I want to start my business and it's going to take off in less than 6 months, when it is a lot of the grind work behind the scenes and having that security blanket. Same with me. I had that security blanket. I moved home to Florida to start my business because it's like, I don't know how I'm going to afford life and start a business. But I think too, it's really being able to have that time to build it, to like, even though you're doing WordPress during class, like, you know, you were building it on the side. And I think that's what a lot of people do as well. It's not ever, you drop everything and focus in on that, because I think it does take some time and effort behind that. And with that, as you started to build your business, what were some of the roadblocks that you encountered when you were building?
Figuring out what I even wanted to do. So I was like, to kind of follow up on that previous conversation, I was going to say, like, for some people, like some of the people that started their firms alongside me, like they grew pretty quickly, but they were really scrappy and they were kind of like willing to do whatever. Right. So they would take whatever client they would. And I was not like, I did not want to do that. Right. I wasn't interested. So say it is possible, right, to really start without that security blanket if you are just going to like dive in, because that's the one thing I learned. There's always legal work, right? So some of the ones that I found that were really successful, they were doing family law, because, you know, there's always someone getting divorced and someone who needs a child custody representation. For me, though, like I didn't want to do that. But I also didn't really know what I wanted to do. This is kind of the problem. I was getting my master's in tax, so I knew I wanted to do tax work. But I didn't want to really do tax controversy like the IRS stuff. I wanted to do the fun part, which for me is helping new business owners like plan and prepare, right? It's a lot more fun to have a 1 hour consultation with a client, telling them like how to set up the LLC for their business they're really excited about, than to like talk to them when they're crying because they got a $20,000 bill from the IRS. That's like a little bit selfish. I do a little bit of both of those things now. But I had to figure out, all right, well, what services does an attorney even provide for new businesses? Like, I didn't know, like I didn't take that class in law school. I had to figure it out. So it was a lot of networking, a lot of meeting people, a lot of listening to their questions and not really knowing the answers. But then I would go back and like research the stuff on my computer so that I'd find the answer. And then after doing that, doing a lot of consultations, I started to figure out, well, what are the actual legal and tax questions and issues that small, creative small business owners, which is who I serve, what are those questions and how can I answer them? And the tough part was like really getting to that point. That's why it took me probably like a solid 2 years to even get like a small amount of clients.
And still, it's building that foundation, right? You were able to do the research. And like what you were saying, some people were scrappy with like family law and other things that there was more work coming in, but right. You were able to kind of take that step back and look at what you really wanted to do and be kind of scrappy in that way. To be able to build that. And so once you started creating and for tax purposes and for business owners and all the fun stuff, what was maybe one or two client success stories you've had maybe in the past or recently that you would want to share with us?
Sure. So another big part of this discovery process was like finding my niche, because in turning away work I didn't want to do, like I knew I wanted to do small business work, but not just for like any small business. I wanted to work with like fun, cool people. So which is how I ended up stumbling into working with creatives, like namely the wedding industry is kind of my biggest segment of folks. So photographers and wedding planners and caterers. But now I work with a lot of interior designers and photographers and website designers and those kind of folks. So I got into that. But pretty early on, I remember I had one client. She's still a really good friend of mine. She came to me because she was doing freelance work for another designer. They were both designers. And she was doing client work for the person who hired her. Legally speaking, she probably should have been an employee, which is like a whole different can of worms. And this person basically stiffed her on like $5,000 worth of work. She's like, I'm not paying you. And then not only that, but then that person like came and tried to sue her like for some really outrageous stuff. And so I felt kind of ill-equipped at the time because I was like pretty new. I was hesitant to take on the client. But the other person's attorney called me and I basically just told him, I kind of like played dumb, which is, you know, a fun skill to bust out every once in a while. But I said, you know, I really don't think my client owes you anything. On top of that, she still has an outstanding $5,000 invoice. But, you know, third thing, I'm sure you're well aware that California has the strictest employment laws in the country. And I think she's missing out on a lot of tax benefits and other employment stuff. So I might advise her to contact the EDD, like the employment development, whatever they're called, and contact an employment attorney, which would mean thousands of dollars that she'd, you know, they'd be going after his client for. And he was like, well, no. Let's just, you know, we'll talk it out. Like, we'll talk it out, figure it out. So there was that one, and she was like immensely grateful because we ended up, my client was, because we got it like wrapped up basically in a week. And then I had another couple of clients who had just issues with unpaying clients, like a wedding photographer, a wedding planner, clients who just didn't want to pay, sending them demand letters, those kind of things. So always really rewarding. You know, when we work in the legal field, I think people are kind of scared of attorneys, but it's like, well, no, we're here to help you for the most part. There's good ones and bad ones, let's say.
So I've heard.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad we have a good one here. But with that, as you've built your business, had all these successes, I'm curious, because I know you don't just practice law. You also have a book that came out the end of last year. Could you tell us a little bit more about your book?
Sure. So it's right up there. Unfuck Your Biz. What's the tagline? A step-by-step framework to get your legal and tax shit legit. I should know that. That's just like basically my business tagline. The book actually originally came out in 2020. This is the second edition, which we did release at the end of last year. So we made some updates, redesigned the cover, did all of that. And it essentially teaches the framework that I used to teach in my signature course. So after a couple of years doing one-on-one services, I got into the online course space. I created a $2,000 program called Unfuck Your Biz. My podcast is the same name. And the course taught like a 5-step framework. And I ended up writing the book really as like a marketing funnel into the course. So people bought the book, they went into a funnel to get the course, all that kind of thing. And I no longer provide that course. A lot of the curriculum is inside of my new program, but we still sell the book. I don't market it nearly as much as I should. But every few weeks, someone will send me a DM and they're like, oh my God, I finished your book. It was so helpful. And then it always reminds me that I need to like try to sell more copies because it's, you know, gets people results, which is the point.
Yes, absolutely. And so what was the initial drive to actually write the book?
So with the course, I don't know if you can see these books down in the corner right here. These are my program textbooks. So they're, I can get them out in a little bit, but they have a lot of worksheets and guides in them. And I already had a textbook for Unfuck Your Biz. And I wanted to really just, I'd always wanted to write a book, but I was like, what am I going to write a book about? It's certainly not going to be fiction. Like I'm not going to weave a tale or anything. Right. I always wanted to have a book. And I was like, well, you know what? I already have this textbook done. A lot of writing's already done. I'm in a small business mastermind. I've been in the same mastermind now for over 3 years. And one of the, it's me and 5 women. And one of the women is a book coach for entrepreneurs who want to have books basically to help grow their platforms. And she was like, you know, Brayden, we could probably write that book. Like, it's not going to be too hard. So we did. And with my textbook, I already had about 30,000 of the 60,000 words like already done. It just needed to be edited. So it was like halfway done at the start, which was great.
Precursor. I love that. It just made it so seamless, but it's all the factors too. Just talking about like the mastermind being with around the right people too, that can help you, you help them as well. And you mentioned that earlier too, when you were building your business, there was so much networking happening. And I think that's such a pivotal point in entrepreneurship of being able to create really solid friendships, relationships in business to help each other. And that's what it's really about. And I love that you were able to get your book done. It made it a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely made it a lot easier. Yeah. And it's been fun. I know someday I'm going to have a second book, but I haven't figured out what that will be about yet. I have an idea. Mm-hmm. I have an idea, but I only think I'd be able to write maybe like 10,000 words. So I think we're like 3 years away from another full book.
Okay. Well, in 3 years, everybody listening, you have to go get the book.
Yeah. They got to read this one first though. This book, I should say, it covers like LLCs, S corps, tax deductions, basically everything you need to know to like run your business from a legal and tax perspective. And it's really written for folks that are like from $0 in revenue, like you haven't started your business to up to like a couple $100,000. And I feel like, a lot of publications and a lot of education speak more to the people who want to go out and get like venture capital funding and build like multi-million dollar businesses. Like that's not who I really speak to. Mm-hmm. So this book, it's good for a lot of people. $30 on the website. Go grab it.
Well, I'm going to grab it because I haven't read it yet. It's on my list now. But so I know you have a podcast as well. Could you tell us a little bit more about your podcast, how you got started with that?
So podcast is called Unfuck Your Biz with Brayden, asterisk for the U. If anyone wants to go search for it, just like the book, you can probably see the little asterisk in there. When did I start that podcast? Was it fall of 2020? I feel like so much happened in 2020. And it's weird because when I think about the pandemic starting, it feels not long ago, but when I think about the things I did in 2020, it does feel like a long time ago. I actually think I started the podcast in October of 2019, so a few months before, but it was my second podcast, technically. My first podcast, I don't really ever talk about because it basically was like a trial run. I think I got to like 30 episodes. I was like, I like this podcasting thing, but the name was dumb. I ended up hating the name. It didn't really make sense. The show format didn't really make sense. Are you familiar with Jenna Kutcher? Do you listen to the Gold Digger podcast?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
My first podcast was kind of similar. I just thought like, oh, like Jenna has a podcast where she talks about like anything and everything business, right? So I thought I could do the same. Well, at the time, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I'd only been in business for a couple of years. I could share what I learned, which wasn't much. But then it kind of dawned on me. I was like, no, people want to come to me for like law, tax, and financial stuff. So I'm going to start over with a new podcast and just focus on that. And now I've started to branch out a little bit. We do profit reports on the podcast, which I love. I have other business owners, kind of like this show, come on. But more specifically, I have them share their profit and loss statements with me. And I ask them questions about specific categories. Like, you spend X amount of dollars on marketing, like how much went into advertising? How do those ads convert? And that kind of ties in because we do bookkeeping and like some financial consulting in the company. So it's a fun way to demonstrate that in life.
It goes back to transparency, like what your core value is, but showing that and being able to dive into that and understand it a little bit more, because sometimes it can get so convoluted with all the numbers. If people aren't numbers people, I mean, you can see profit and loss, of course, but really being able to break that down and see it from different business owners. I love that concept.
Yeah. And I do my own profit reports every month. So it's kind of like, I feel like I got to put my money where my mouth is. So I disclose my own revenue, business expenses, and profit every month as well. And that's just something I feel like I need to do if I'm going to ask other people to do the same. But it gives a good example to show like how I budget and allocate funds in my business, how I make spending decisions, how I think about hiring team members, because these are the conversations that people often don't have in business, because we're taught, a lot of us are taught early on that talking about money is taboo. But it's also, well, how do we make sound business decisions if we're all too afraid to talk about money? Because then we're only living in the silo of our own head. We don't really know like what other people are doing. So it's like, there's a million and one marketing podcasts. Like, why don't we talk about our bank accounts also?
Yeah, I agree. And I think too, it just gives you that blueprint of like the questions that you might not be asking because you don't know to ask those questions too. And it just gives it that really nice framework of how to navigate it. So I love that.
Right.
But with that being said, I would love to know just a little bit when it comes to taxes and tax law, what are some things that people really need to look out for as they're starting to build their business? What do you think are the most important things that you would say are?
Yeah, pay quarterly taxes. Like if you're not already doing that, if you're making a profit in your business, you most likely need to be making estimated quarterly tax payments. So that way you don't have a big bill due when you go to file your tax return. You do this A, to avoid a large bill, and B, to avoid penalties. Now the penalty, I don't want to like freak anyone out. I don't like to teach, fear-based tactics. So I will tell you the penalties tend to be pretty low. But it's more to avoid that big bill. That's what we don't want to happen. And then people often like to get into like really, really complex tax strategies. But what I always like to say is I always find it like bonkers and bananas when people are getting into like complex NFT and like cryptocurrency and investment strategies when they like have credit card debt and owe back taxes. It's like, all right, well, let's get like the shit cleaned up and cleared up, right? Like, get your basics done before we could try to get real creative. All right. So I apply the same thing to tax strategy. Like, let's get the basics done. And then once you have money to work with, we can talk about some of the more advanced strategies. But if you're not, you know, doing the minimum, you don't really have any money to work with or mental bandwidth to think about it.
That's a good point, because crypto is like a hot topic. It's been a hot topic for the last like year or so. And I think too, just to bridge it back of start with the basics and then you can get a little more creative.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like trying to take a calculus class before you've like covered algebra. It's like, all right.
Yes.
Go back a little bit.
I agree with that. What are two or three tips you could give entrepreneurs on their journey, just from your experience, that you wish you might have known in the beginning of building your business that you know now?
Oh, two or three tips. Okay. So you have to find some good business colleagues, right? One thing, this was a kind of a hard lesson for me, but it's true in all facets of life. You cannot expect any of your family members or close friends to care about your business. Okay. So if you go to dinner, like, you know, they might give you the polite, like, how's that like cute little thing that you're doing over there, which is infuriating, right? Mm-hmm. But that's their way of like being nice. And I just kind of got to the point where, you know, I started saying, it's good. Yeah. Thanks for asking. It's going pretty well. We got some exciting things going on. And I just leave it there unless they genuinely care to ask more questions, then we answer them. But no one, you can't expect anyone else to be excited for you. You should go find other people who are doing similar things to you so you can be excited for one another. So that's like one big tip that I think is just, it will really take like a weight off your shoulders. Because especially if you're married, you have a mom, dad, who's not an entrepreneur. If you are waiting for their validation for you to feel good about your business journey, then, you know, setting yourself up for failure.
I completely agree with that tip, because I think I had that same struggle in the beginning where I was like so excited about my business. I thought all my friends would be excited about it and they were supportive, but to the level they could be supportive of. And you're right. It's, you know, you got to surround yourself with other people that are on that same journey as you.
Right. A lot of the times they just don't know. They don't really understand. And then also, you know, with direct sales and everything else nowadays, like it's pretty common for us to see people starting new businesses on Facebook every other day. And you never really know what's going to stick. And that's a rabbit hole I probably don't need to go down. But, you know, I think a lot of people are just like, oh, you know, they're kind of rolling their eyes. Like Braden's doing another thing. Like, I don't have the time and the bandwidth and the energy to think about this. But that's okay, because I have people in my corner who are here to uplift me.
Absolutely. And I mean, there are going to be supportive people in your network, but also in your family and your friends. But like what you said, the level of capacity that they can give and be supportive, they will, whether it's sharing a post or just saying great job, whatever it is, but everyone's on their own journey, remembering that too. But I've been enjoying this conversation so much, but we're going to jump into the rapid fire questions if you're ready for them.
Sure.
Okay. The first question is, who is your hero?
I don't really have a hero. Is that terrible?
No, it's not terrible.
Yeah. I feel like I should say like my mom or my dad. They're, you know, really big, like really big influences in my life. Of course, respect my husband a lot. He actually is somewhat a role model because he's older than me and also an attorney, very successful. But I've never had, you know, like a celebrity kind of figure that I would consider a hero. I just am kind of like in my own world doing my own thing.
Hey, and that's what it is for you, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds like you're your own hero to me.
Yeah.
And
not conceited at all when I put it that way.
I think it's just like showing up for you and being you and knowing that, like, it's Matthew McConaughey, he said a speech, I forgot what award show it was. This was like years ago where he was saying his hero is like him in 10 years. So, you know, everyone's on their own path.
I love that. I've followed a lot. I call them celebrity entrepreneurs. There are a lot that I followed, but inevitably you end up always finding out something about the person that you don't love, a way that you want to ethically run your business differently. And I'm sure there are people who follow me who end up seeing things I do that they don't really like either. But I think it's really, really good to have, I have role models. I wouldn't say that I have heroes. Let's put it that way.
I like that. Good reframe. And what motivates you to work smarter?
Making money without working a ton. So work smarter, not harder. I think that's, for me, I have a certain amount of monthly income I want to make, and my goal is to work 4 hours a day to get there. Because I think if I work less than that, I'll get bored. And if I work more than that, I'll get resentful.
And if you were a superhero, what would be your power or powers?
Oh, this one's hard too. I want to say like teleportation, so I can go anywhere I want, whenever I want to, but I actually love driving. I have a like a really fast Mini Cooper, and I like to whip that thing around. But I don't know, it would still be nice just to like appear in Chicago for like lunch or like go visit my sister in Florida without having to like book a flight. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so too. Makes life a little easier. You can still drive, but you know, just for those mini trips.
Exactly. Or I'm like, I'm not fucking with rush hour traffic today, so let's just, you know, blink and go home or whatever.
Yes, 100%. California is rough. So if you could share a meal with any four individuals, living or dead, who would they be?
I used to have kind of a stock answer for this one because it's changed a lot. Again, like kind of the we see flaws in our heroes type of thing. I used to always say J.K. Rowling. I don't really care to meet her anymore. We don't need to get into that unless you really want to. She's off the list. I always used to say Amy Poehler and Tina Fey too, because I just love their comedy and I think they'd be like really fun to hang out with. But I'm going more than four, but that's, you know, deal with it. It's my answers. Tamika Catchings, my all-time favorite basketball player. I watch a lot of women's basketball. She played for the Indiana Fever where I'm from. She would be super cool to meet. And then I have a hard time thinking of historical figures, right? Because I'm a progressive person. So there are progressive figureheads I'd want to meet, but then I have a feeling that if you go and meet them, they wouldn't be too progressive by modern standards. So yeah. I'm gonna have to come back to that one. I'm gonna have to think of some folks, some pioneering people I want to meet.
It's hard, especially on the spot. Yeah. And what is the most daring thing you've ever done?
Daring thing. I mean, starting a business is pretty daring. Just like putting yourself out there, right? That's pretty daring. I have completed 4 Ironman triathlons. I don't know if I would call those daring, but it does require a lot of perseverance. That's a kind of like a different kind of a thing.
I mean, I think that's daring. I don't know if I could handle it.
I went rock climbing yesterday. That's like daring for some folks, but it's kind of exercise I like to do. So yeah.
Outdoors or indoors?
Indoor. Okay. I have been outdoor rock climbing though.
Yeah. Oh, my palms just started getting sweaty thinking about outdoor. I can
You're
do
roped
indoor.
In. It's safe. Yeah.
Yeah. No big deal. Mm-hmm. More power to you. And what is the phone app that you use the most?
Probably Instagram. Mm. Yeah. Instagram, TikTok, I don't know, social media generally. I don't have a lot of phone apps though. I try to keep them to like 2 screens on my iPhone.
That's good.
I hate when companies make you download an app for something. Like I got a rental car when I was in Vegas and I had to like download the app. Cause then of course it's like easier to check in and all of that. But then I hate having extra apps so that I don't want to delete the app. But I know next year when I go to get my rental car again, I'm going to be mad that I deleted it. This is my push pull of like trying to be a minimalist in life.
Oh, I hear you. It has like the little cloud because you know you've already like done it, but like you just mm-hmm. don't want to re-download it, but you have to. You have another option.
Right. Ugh, exactly.
The struggle. Mm-hmm. And what is the last book that you've read or listened to?
Let me open my Audible app because I couldn't tell you. I could probably guarantee to you that I have like 3 half listened to books. No, you know what? It was Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. Mm-hmm. And I almost finished it, but I've listened to it probably 4 times. So the last time I listened to it just as much as I needed to. Every time I build a new website, I re-listen to it and I like write my web copy while I'm listening to the book. So that was the most recent one, most likely.
It's a good one. I haven't read that in a while. Need to reread it. I have so many that I need to reread, but anyways, so if you were to have a movie about your life thus far, who would play you?
Oh, I have no idea. That one I can't answer. I'm like terrible with like knowing actors, and I know actresses a lot better than actors. And I don't know if Kate Blanchett could portray me very well. She's my favorite actress.
She's a great actress. She is.
Yeah, I don't know if Kate Blanchett could pull this off. I mean, she's fabulous, but you know, I don't know.
You never know.
Never know.
And what is your favorite family recipe, whether you make it as it like traditional or just together?
I hope no one in my family is watching this YouTube show because I'm going to be honest, everyone. There are really no family recipes that I want to take on with me. My grandpa's biscuits and gravy, pretty good. I do make that. But most of my recipes I have created. I make a giant batch of like a tub of salsa every week for my husband. He loves that. But a lot of my favorite recipes are like from Ina Garten, so I can't really take credit for those either.
Fair enough. Well, it sounds like the salsa is a win.
Yeah. And I make my own homemade jam every week because I have like strawberry or blackberry jam on toast every morning. Uh-huh. So I make my own condiments.
That's really cool. Stuff.
Yeah. I might start putting those in my business newsletters if anyone cares.
I mean, I feel like people would, you know, if it's simple and like easy to do.
Yeah. After this interview, I'm going to go make myself some breakfast tacos with my salsa. It's good for everything. Yeah.
That sounds delicious right now. And if you had to describe yourself as an animal personality type, what animal would you be?
Probably a dog. That's like an easy answer, right? I'm an Enneagram 7. I'm super into the Enneagram. Mm-hmm. If anyone else is watching, so you probably know what an Enneagram 7 is. Yeah. Yeah. And the Enneagram 7 is often described as a golden retriever. So I feel like I'd have to go with that.
I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. I could see it. And what is your favorite way to spend a day off? Or if you're not working those 4 hours, what are you doing?
Usually some kind of exercise. Not because I'm like a fitness fanatic. It's just because I have a lot of pent up energy and there's a lot of activities that I enjoy. So if I'm not triathlon and marathon training, Like last weekend, I went to the gym, I worked out, and then I played I played pickup basketball for an hour, and then I played pickleball for an hour. And then the next day I went rock climbing, and I also do CrossFit like throughout the week. So I love, yeah, when I was in college, I would like go to the campus rec center and you could play like a pickup game of whatever you wanted. So I would go for like 5 hours on a Saturday and just play like five different sports. It's so fun.
Oh, wow. Got a lot of energy. I'm glad you get to use it in good ways.
Yeah, that's the key, right? Use it in productive ways. I try.
It sounds like you're doing. Yeah. And what is something an outsider wouldn't know about your industry?
So when it comes to tax stuff, I mean, this is, I think for me, an easy one. Like you don't have to be great at math, like to do taxes. We do the most complicated thing I ever do is calculate percentages. So if you know how to figure out like what 55, you know, if you made $100,000 and spent $30,000, like what percentage went to expenses and what percentage is profit? Like that's about the most complicated math I do.
I miss my calling. No, just kidding. Yeah. Just kidding. But with that being said, where can people find you, use your services? We're going to link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Sure. So if people are active on Facebook and Facebook groups, I have a Facebook group called Braden's Besties. You can go join there. Follow me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active at Braden Adam Drake. That's B-R-A-D-E-N, Adam like the biblical figure and Drake like the rapper. That's my full name. Website is www.bradendrake.com. But you mentioned this was releasing on February 23rd, which is actually the day that I am relaunching my law firm. So I have actually not provided one-on-one services in a large capacity in a couple of years. It's been all education-based, but we're reopening the law firm where we will offer all sorts of small business legal work. And the name for that, this is the first time I'm announcing this.
Kind of exciting.
For a few weeks out. The name is the Not Your Average Law Firm, and our website is NotAVG, so not average, notavglaw.com.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. And everyone, make sure you refer whatever you need to do to make sure that Braden is there and can help you in any capacity. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been such a pleasure having you. And make sure to like, subscribe, comment below. What was the biggest takeaway from today? I'm sure Braden would love to see it as well as I would. And we'll see you on the next video.